Hi, this is Kip Laxon. I welcome you to this edition of the podcast, Faith Matters Today. And we are continuing our devotional study together for the season of Lent that I began last week. We are now in the second week of the season of Lent in 2023. And what I would like to do today and in the following weeks leading up to Easter and the glories of Eastertide is to begin to focus more intently now upon the last few days of Jesus on the earth. His Passion Week, which begins on Palm Sunday and moves through Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday prior to Easter, known as his Passion or Passiontide. And our attention during this Lenten season begins to increasingly focus on the last words and actions of Jesus during those final weeks of his life here on earth prior to the resurrection. His words are important. The Gospels, of course, are filled with things he said, preaching, parables, his pithy comments to the Pharisees, and a host of other quotations that are attributed to Jesus. At the center of those words of Jesus that would help us focus on the Lenten season are the words that Jesus uttered from the cross. The four Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John record that at the time of Jesus' crucifixion, he said several things to a variety of people while he was crucified, while he was dying on the cross. These are known as the last words of Jesus or the dying words of Jesus. And beginning today and in the following weeks, I want to focus in a little tighter, microscopically, if you will, on the dying words of Jesus, his last will and testament, if you would like to put it that way. And so I'm going to begin today from the 19th chapter of the Gospel of St. John, verses 23 through 27. Hear these words. When the soldiers crucified Jesus, they took his clothes and his sandals and divided them into four shares, one for each soldier. His shirt was seamless, woven as one piece from the top to the bottom. They said to each other, "Let's not tear it. Let's cast lots to see who will get it." This was to fulfill the scripture, "They divided my clothes among themselves, and they cast lots for my clothing." That's what the soldiers did. Jesus' mother and his mother's sister, Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene stood near the cross. When Jesus saw his mother and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to his mother, "Woman, here is your son." Then he said to the disciple, "Here is your mother." And from that time on, this disciple took him into his home. This is the reading of the gospel. Thanks be to God. In this pericope of scripture from the 19th chapter of St. John's gospel, we have this image of Jesus hanging on the cross. He sees his mother, and then he sees this one that is identified as the disciple whom he loved. Biblical scholars recognize that this is a veiled reference to the Apostle John, historically known as the one who wrote the gospel according to St. John. He doesn't, in the gospel, refer to himself by name, but rather refers to himself in this way of saying the disciple whom Jesus loved, not to suggest he did not love the other apostles or the other disciples. But this seems to be an opaque way that the author of John's gospel, the Apostle John, refers to himself, as if it's a way of referring to him in third person, though that analogy would break down literally, but it gives us an idea of what he was doing. We don't know why he did this. There's been much speculation about that. But nonetheless, he refers to himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, there's much here for us to get to, and I hope it'll help us as we focus our devotional in this sacred season of Lent. So let's begin this way. As you study these last words of Jesus while he's dying on the cross, it's interesting to note that his first three statements from the cross concern others. First, he spoke to the mob. He said to them, "Father, forgive them." We'll get to that in a following podcast. Then he spoke to the malefactor. He said, "Today, you will be with me in paradise," referring to one of the thieves that was crucified along with him. We will also look at that a little closer in a later podcast. Now, he speaks to his mother. He says to her, "Woman, here is your son." No mother ever had a son like Mary. No mother ever had a son that loved her like Jesus. Jesus, bearing the weight of the world of sin on his shoulders, hanging on the cross, about to become the first and only member of the family of God to walk through the valley of the shadow of death without even one angel to go with him. Here, he is entering into a spiritual no man's land. Yet even in this hour of great agony and this hour of his great personal grief, he took his last opportunity to care for his mother. I'm sure there are a lot of things that Jesus learned as a child, but one of the things he obviously learned was to honor and to cherish and to love his family. The gospel records speak of his family, speak of his brothers and of his sisters, of Mary and of Joseph. There was a great love there, but much, much love for his mother, who is the one later mentioned there at the cross. She, the mother of Jesus, is witnessing this horrible event of the crucifixion of her son. There's a great lesson we can learn from this one saying from Jesus on the cross, and that is that we should take every opportunity to love those who are dearest to us and to let them know that we love them, to make sure that before we leave this earth or before they leave us, that we tell them that we love them. That's the image we see of Jesus here on the cross. Now, he makes two references. On the one hand, he says to his mother Mary, "Woman," and that's not a term of derision. He's not backhanding referencing her, but actually in the days of Jesus, to say to his mother, "Woman," it was a term of endearment. It was almost like we would say mama or mother in a way of love and compassion. He's not insulting her or dismissing her. He is actually, in an endearing way, saying to her, "Woman, here is your son." But he's not referencing himself there. He's actually pointing to John, the disciple whom Jesus loves. And he's saying to his mother, "John is going to take care of you." Then he turns to John, the disciple whom he loves, and he says, "Here is your mother." So what Jesus is doing in this moment, in his dying moments from the cross, he is saying, and I'll paraphrase it in language that we can better understand, he's saying to his mother, "I'm leaving, I'm dying, but you're going to be cared for. I want John to become your caregiver." And then he turns to the apostle, the disciple whom he loves, John, and he says, "Here's your mother. Take care of my mother." So he's wrapping up loose ends, if you will. It was the responsibility of the firstborn son in that particular culture to care for your mother. He's not going to be able to do that now because he's dying on the cross. And after that and the resurrection, that'll change things. He will be different. Things will be different. And so in this hour of his great grief and agony, he is caring both for his mother and also the apostle John, the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, what does this say to us? I think it says to us three powerful things. Notice these. Christ gives us a great example of how right up to the very end, we need to show care and compassion to the ones we love, to the ones that we love the most that are part of our daily living. Let's notice these three things. First, the devotion to his family. The first face that Jesus saw at the cross, according to the Gospel of John, was the face of his mother. Just as an athlete who has won a great championship, whether it's in football or baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever the case may be, in that great thrill of victory and the roar of the crowd, how many times when the camera zooms in on them do you see them say something like, "Hi, Mom," as they throw up a thumb of victory? They're often referencing their mother, these great athletes, in that moment of winning, that moment of success, that moment of victory. And the camera comes up close upon them, big smiles upon their faces and celebrations. They want to give their mom the credit. "Hi, Mom." Christ looked into the teeming throng of people gathered around the cross who was jeering at him or just watching and taking this crucifixion in. And he sees his own mother. And in this moment when he says, "Woman, here is your son," it's as if it's his great, "Hi, Mom," in this moment of recognition, that in this moment of great peril, he sees his mother's face. We see Mary twice in St. John's Gospel. At the beginning, in chapter 2, she is with Jesus and some of his friends at the wedding in Cana of Galilee, where he famously transforms water into wine. After they had run out of wine at this wedding, this ongoing festival, and Mary comes to Jesus and says, basically, "You need to do something about this." And he says to her, "My time has not yet come," seeming to imply that he's not quite ready yet to take a public step forward as the Messiah that he is, as the Christ. John reports in the second chapter that she then turns to some of the servants that are there and says, "Whatever he tells you to do, do it." Then Jesus does. He acts upon it, and he tells them to fill up these water jars, these jars with water, and they fill them to the brim, and they bring them back. And then he has the host of the wedding, the festival, to taste the water that has now become wine. And the host says, "This is some of the greatest wine I've ever tasted." And as they share the wine with the attendants and the participants at the wedding celebration, they say that it's the best wine they've ever tasted. "You've saved the best until last." All of this, an interrelation between Jesus and his mother, Mary. That's the first reference in St. John's Gospel to Mary, the mother of Jesus. But then at the end of the Gospel, toward the end of John's Gospel, in chapter 19, she's now enduring the grief of this crucifixion. She's at the precipice of the funeral of her son. An anonymous poet in the Middle Ages expressed it this way, and I think captures it better, perhaps, than my words or your words might. The poet says, "Near the cross, her vigil keeping, stood the mother, worn with weeping, where he hung, the dying Lord. Through her soul an anguish groaning, bowed in sorrow, sighing, moaning, past the sharp and piercing sword. Oh, the weight of her affliction, hers who won God's benediction, hers who bore God's Holy One. Oh, that speechless, ceaseless yearning, oh, those dim eyes never turning from her wondrous, suffering son." I find it deeply moving to contemplate that while Jesus was dying, Jesus did not forget that while living, he was Mary's son. Having just provided a heavenly home for the criminal beside him, he now provides an earthly home for his mother, who is going to be left behind. Even in his dying, he was letting his mother know, "I love you, I care for you, I'm going to see that your needs are met. Thank you for being the mother that you've been to me. Woman, here is your son," a devotion to his family. That's the first thing. The second thing that speaks to me out of this powerful passage is the duty to his friend, the devotion to his family, and the duty to his friend. We were told in verse 25 that there were four other women present at the cross. But in the 26th verse, we find that there was also along with them this one man, the disciple whom Jesus loved. This was, of course, the Apostle John, as I mentioned earlier, the author of this gospel. This is important because John and Jesus had a special relationship that comes out in all the gospel accounts, but it's more pronounced in the gospel that bears John's name. They had a special relationship. Jesus and Simon Peter had an intense relationship. Jesus and the other disciples, the other apostles or the apostolic circle, they had an intact relationship. But Jesus and John had an intimate relationship. By that, I'm not implying a sexual relationship. No, indeed. I'm saying that their relationship was on a different level. The fact that John is even at the cross when the others are not, that's often lost on the readers of John's gospel. We're told in the other gospels that when Jesus was arrested, that they all forsook him and fled. And that would have included the apostle John. But he's now come back, and the others are not mentioned. The fact that John is even at the cross and that he adopts Mary as his own mother tells us some things about this disciple whom Jesus loved, this beloved apostle. Not to minimize the importance of the other apostles in Jesus' life, but to recognize that they had a unique relationship. They were soulmates, if you will, as friends. Somehow they identified with one another. They connected in a way that others had not. Some biblical scholars have speculated that perhaps Jesus and John had grown up together. That's possible. Or that they were related in some way, though we don't have historical evidence to verify that. That also could be possible. Perhaps John is a cousin to Jesus. We don't know that. John the Baptist certainly was a cousin of Jesus, but we don't know that for sure. Needless to say, and be that as it may, John and Jesus have this special relationship. And I said I wanted to mention some things about this relationship. First of all, notice John's affection. All the other disciples had forsaken Jesus. Every one of them had turned tail and run when he was confronted by the mob in the Garden of Gethsemane. But this one disciple comes back, it seems, and the only one who came back at this point, at this dark hour of the crucifixion, John, the beloved disciple. And as far as I can tell, there's only one thing that would have brought John back to that cross, knowing that he could risk his own life as one of the followers of Jesus. The one thing that brought him back was this intense love, this intense relationship, this intense affection that he shared. Who would want to go and witness the horror of the crucifixion of your dearest friend? John seems to be one who wanted to be there in this greatest hour of need. And after all, the Gospels report that in the Garden of Gethsemane, what did Jesus say to them while he's praying in deep distress and the disciples in weariness fall asleep? He says, "Could you not stay awake and pray with me 1 hour?" Perhaps John felt the guilt of abandoning his friend in this hour of great need, overcame that, and brought himself back to the cross, to the crucifixion. His affection had him there. He wasn't a gawker. He wasn't a tourist. He wasn't just there to take it all in, to see, to be able to say, "I was there." He wasn't one of these wanting to get the T-shirt to say, "I've been there, I've done this." No, he was there out of affection. And his own gospel bears that out. The second thing I want you to notice about this beloved disciple that stands there at the cross is not only his affection, but John's assignment. Jesus didn't really ask John. Rather, Jesus really commanded him. He commands him, "Here, you take my mother, and you treat her as your own mother, and you take care of her." Why was this particular statement recorded by John in his gospel? What does this statement of Jesus to his mother and to his disciple say to us today? That brings me to the third thing, I think, that emerges for me out of this powerful scene at the crucifixion of Jesus, and that is the demand to be faithful. First, there's the devotion to his family. Second, there's the duty of his friend. And third, there's the demand to be faithful. Faithfulness. Verse 27 continues and says, "And from that hour, from that moment, the disciple took her, Mary, the mother of Jesus, into his own family, into his own home." Not only did a mother adopt a son, but a son adopted a mother there at the foot of the cross. Jesus arranges the whole thing. He orchestrates the whole thing while being crucified. He's caring for his mother. He's caring for his friend. And he brings them now into this special relationship. And from that hour, the disciple took her to his own home. Jesus made two statements, one to his family and one to his friend. Statements that teach us a great lesson. It's a lesson about our responsibilities to care for one another in the hour of our greatest need, and not to compare our hour of our greatest need to anything like that hour of great need that Jesus experienced in his crucifixion. But the lesson is there for us. So easy to live life taking for granted our relationships, our friendships, and our loved ones. You'll notice that John took Mary to his own home. Jesus was asking John to take his place, to step into his sandals. Jesus, as the oldest, to care for his mother, cannot do that now. Circumstances are keeping him from fulfilling that duty. And so he's asking his best friend to step into his sandals and take that responsibility. What he was saying was this, I think. I'm taking your place, John, on the cross. And after I'm gone, I want you to take my place on this earth by caring for my mother. Over in the next chapter of St. John's Gospel, in verse 21, Jesus says, "As the Father has sent me, I also send you." Just as the Father had sent the Son to do his work, now the Son was sending us, was sending John to do his work on the earth. We are ambassadors for Christ. As ambassador, we are someone who resides in a country, literally in the place of the leader. Think of it. Our government sends out ambassadors to countries around the world, all around the world. And these ambassadors are, number one, the representative of the President of the United States, but they also are ultimately our, as Americans, our representatives of our country in those foreign countries, in those foreign lands. When you share the gospel, you're not only bearing witness to the salvation that Jesus Christ has brought to you, but you're also bearing witness with Jesus as his ambassador in the world. It's captured in these words so succinctly. Christ has no hands but our hands to do his work today. Christ has no feet but our feet to lead people in his way. Christ has no tongue but our tongue to tell them how he died. Christ has no help but our help to bring us to his side. Think of it. Jesus died loving us, calling upon John to care for his mother, showing us that we are to live loving others. Let us take every opportunity to love them, our loved ones, our friends, our family. Every opportunity to love them before we leave them. It would have been so easy for Jesus in that moment of crucifixion and grief to have had no thought but of what he was going through, the pain he was enduring. But in the midst of that great moment of agony, he reaches out and he cares for his mother. He reaches out and he cares for his son. Yes, it's true. Jesus died caring for the world. But we see that care, that compassion, evidenced in very specific ways when he looks at his mother and says, "Here is your son. John is going to step into my sandals and be on this earth what I have been and can now no longer be." And he looks at his friend, John, and says, "You're going to take my place. I'm taking your place in this moment of my death. You now take my place in the living out of the rest of your days to care for my mother." In the city of Jerusalem, one of the sites that you often will see and visit if you're there on a pilgrimage in the Holy Land, and I've been there on several occasions, is known as the Church of Agony. All throughout the land of Jesus, Palestine, especially in the city of Jerusalem, there are churches everywhere. Most of these churches are Eastern Orthodox churches, some Roman Catholic and some Protestant. But most of the holy sites in the city of Jerusalem that we associate with the activities and events that we see recorded in the gospel accounts are Eastern Orthodox churches built either on or around or near, or even in some instances, such as the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, over the holy site itself. The Church of Agony is a church that is built beside the Garden of Gethsemane. You can actually walk through the Garden of Gethsemane and see it as it was or as it had looked at the time of Jesus. And then as you make your way through and around the Garden of Gethsemane, you stand at the entrance of the Church of Agony. Inside the Church of Agony is an ongoing prayer service, 24/7. This church never closes. And at the chancel site of this church is a large rock. It's not a stone. It's really a large rock. Built around that rock is a kneeling rail, a chancel rail, an altar rail, if you will, where people gather at all times of the day and night to pray. There is an Eastern Orthodox priest that's there, several are there from time to time, but they're always telling you to be quiet. You can hear people praying, you can hear people singing, but there's no conversation. You're not allowed to take photographs and pictures. It's not intended to be a touristy atmosphere. I have sung in a choir in that Church of Agony. I have been shushed by the priest for daring to whisper aloud as I'm trying to guide the pilgrims with me on the way. But outside this church is a sign there to the left of the door, or was when I was there. And it says, quiet. No explanations inside. Now that's a reference to tour guides who are not to bring their people through the Church of Agony, talking and sharing history and background. They're not to be explaining. But there's also a spiritual meaning to that. Think of it. Here is a church built over a large rock that is believed to be the rock, or like the rock, or near the place where Jesus prayed in those last hours. Lord, take this cup from me. Not my will, but your will be done. In the hours of his agony leading up to his crucifixion, when the disciples were sleeping, Jesus is praying. It was here that he also prayed so intensely that his perspiration were like great drops of blood that dripped from his forehead down to his chin and onto the ground. When I saw that sign, quiet, no explanations inside, I thought of a deeper spiritual reason and a deeper spiritual meaning. There are no real, adequate explanations in our human language to capture or describe what Jesus was doing and what Jesus did to bear the weight of the world upon his shoulders in those last few hours of his life on this earth. And while there are no explanations, we do see what Jesus is really caring about when he's on the cross, caring for his mother and reaching out to one of his dearest friends. Love the people in your life like you've never loved them before. And may God give us the ability to love with a divine love, like we see evidenced in the life of Jesus, in the death of Jesus, in the crucifixion of Jesus. And yes, there will be times when there are simply no explanations for it. I want to wish you a very sacred and holy Lenten season. And as you practice this Lenten season, by that I mean if you have given up something that you enjoy in your life as an act of sacrifice, or you're fasting from meals certain times during Lent, or you're devoting yourself to more prayer, more Bible reading, more study, you're using this podcast as a Lenten discipline, I pray that you will be drawn closer. I pray that I will be drawn closer to the heart of Jesus in this holy season. And as we enter in just a few weeks, the Passion Week of Jesus, as we imagine him riding into the city to waving palm branches, only a few hours later, literally, to find himself in the throes of great pain. May we find this Jesus Christ true to us, real to us, saving us, redeeming us. I want to thank Brett Smith for his continued help in the publication of this podcast and Ed Temple as he posts them to the church website. And I encourage you, as I always do, to find a house of worship during this Lenten season. And if you're in the Johnson City area or you're visiting and passing through the city, we'd love to see you here at Muncie Memorial United Methodist Church. Sunday morning services at 8:45 and 11 a.m. And please, if you stop by or visit with us, introduce yourself to me. I'm usually out after worship service, shaking hands, greeting people. I'd love to meet you and your family and friends. And I'd love for you to make this church home, this your church home. I want you to come and be a part if you can. This is a wonderful, loving community. We're on a journey together. We don't claim to have all the answers, but we are proud to be United Methodist Christians in the world. And we want to share the message of Jesus and dare to do it in loving, compassionate, and welcoming ways. Next week, I will continue this Lenten devotional with you in this podcast. Please pass it on to your friends and family. Let them have a listen, and let us continue to walk this walk together through the Lenten season. I look forward to next week. God bless you.